one side decided what the compromise is and asking or telling the other side, here's what your compromise is.
Democratic lawmakers are unhappy with a new budget plan from Republicans. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, May 27th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, confronting the heroin epidemic in Bethel.
It has been an explosion of heroin coming into this community and affecting the families.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by
Spinard Builder Supply. For more than 60 years, SBS has helped Alaskans build from ground to roof to everything in between. Spinard Builder Supply is here to build with you.
And by Crowley, providing marine petroleum distribution and energy support services throughout Alaska since 1953, supporting business development while helping safeguard the environment. More at CrowleyAlaska.com.
After weeks of an impasse, House Republicans have a new message for Democrats. Take our latest budget package or we'll go around you. The proposal Republicans unveiled today addresses two key sticking points for Democrats. It restores education spending to Governor Bill Walker's proposed levels, but keeps a reduction of one-time funding that Democrats had hoped to counteract. Their proposal also maintains the cost of living increases guaranteed in state employee union contracts. It balances those add-ins by directing the governor to make a $30 million cut to agency operations. While explaining the new bill, Republicans on the committee talked a lot about compromise, including Dan Sadler of Eagle River.
I just want to make the observation that any budget is a compromise and that there are unlimited needs and desires in state government. We are in the unfortunate situation of having less money than we'd like to have. So you can't have everything be a number one priority. It's necessary to make compromises, accommodations, and allocate.
But Democrats like Representative David Guttenberg of Fairbanks do not think that compromise accurately describes the new bill.
When we talk about compromise, usually we have two people talking or two parties talking face to face, talking about what the compromise is. I just want to make sure that from my caucus's perspective, that didn't happen. One side decided what the compromise is and asking or telling the other side, here's what your compromise is.
If Democrats do not support the legislation, the Republican majority has found a way to circumvent them. While they currently need a three-quarter vote to access the state's rainy day account, they are able to reduce that threshold by shifting money around in the permanent fund so that it can't be spent. If the legislature does not find a way to plug its multi-billion dollar deficit through its savings, the state government could partially shut down on July 1st. Some Anchorage area residents don't think the compromise is good enough, especially not for education funding. They don't like the plan to move around money to avoid a majority vote either. About 50 people and a group of fiddlers gathered outside of the legislative information offices in downtown Anchorage this afternoon. KSKA's Ann Hillman stopped by.
Mike Chenault, is this your fault? Fun schools, kids rule. Fiddle around with Alaska's kids. We'll think about this all day. Compromise all night. Compromise all day.
Great Alaska Schools organized the protest, one of many this legislative session. Statewide coordinator Dina Mitchell says they were prompted by the proposal to move permanent fund dollars in order to give access to the CBR without a majority vote. She says the newest proposal from the majority still cuts $32 million from education and leaves school districts with less money than they had last year.
This is about the future of Alaska and our children, and to cut education after making that promise of the fund, 3 years of funding last year, and then not be willing to discuss this with the minority is just wrong. They're fiddling with our future. They're fiddling with the finances. They're fiddling with our future. They're fiddling with Alaska.
Members of the faith community, like Carol Libby, also continued their weeks-long vigil asking for Medicaid expansion. 15 different churches are taking turns sending members to the LIO to protest.
And we have just been eager to see it come to the floor anyway, mm-hmm. which it, of course, hasn't as yet. But we are still very hopeful that it might make it and support the 40,000 Alaskans who are uninsured at this time.
Republican lawmakers did not include Medicaid expansion on the agenda for the special session. In Anchorage, I'm Ann Hillman.
Fund, fund, fund our kids' education rules. What we need is 3%. We are watching you.
Bethel is organizing a multi-agency heroin task force to fight the drug. Leaders in the city describe an explosion of heroin use and related crimes in the rural community. In this second story in a three-part series, KYUK's Daisha Eaton reports on the impacts of heroin in Bethel and how the community is fighting it.
Heroin-related calls are putting a strain on city services and the Bethel Police, according to Chief Andre Ashe. He says the department isn't intercepting much heroin on the streets, but they are responding to an increasing number of thefts.
What we're dealing with is the events that it's sort of a nexus to heroin. The thefts, the burglaries, the domestic disturbances, stuff being sold to various individuals online, offline, things being stolen even from family members.
He says addicts steal things they can turn over for quick cash.
Anything from firearms to vehicles, any type of property that people could sell.
Ashe says sometimes thieves resort to stealing traditional Alaska Native subsistence foods.
We've had thefts of berries, salmon berries, blueberries being sold just for people to get enough money for their dependency.
When the victims are family members, they often don't want to press charges, says Ashe. They just want their items back, which he says perpetuates the cycle and keeps the understaffed police department racing from call to call. The fire department's ambulance crew is also seeing more heroin-related calls, according to city officials. And heroin is taking a toll on children and families, according to Phoenicia Gardner, who's worked in and out of the Office of Children's Services in Bethel since 1999. She says she'd never seen the drug come up in their cases until recently.
I didn't even see the presence of heroin when I was here the first time or the second time. It has been an explosion of heroin coming into this community and affecting the families.
And the result, Gardner says, is more neglect and other situations that put kids in danger.
Using substances while having your children in the household, having other criminal element in the household while using with your children there. We also have had children born with heroin in their systems.
The Western Office of OCS is handling an increasing number of cases involving babies withdrawing from heroin, Gardner says, and trying to ensure they get proper treatment once they're born. The city council has taken notice of the problems, and one council member, Byron Michinski, has been using his position to work on the issue, bringing it up in discussion at council meetings. That recently resulted in a threat. One morning, he found a typewritten note in the driver's seat of his Jeep. It said,
"You better back off the heroin issue before you end up killing yourself. If you call the police, we will know about it, haha. And the next time I see you walking outside your shop, you won't make it back in."
Police are investigating. He says the threat was unnerving, but it just made him want to push harder. At a recent Bethel City Council meeting, he did just that.
Next on the agenda, Action Memorandum 1516, Community Action Against Heroin and Other Illicit Drugs. Brought forward by Mr. Michinski.
That's Bethel Mayor Rick Robb introducing Michinski's action memorandum, directing the administration to work with community groups to address the heroin problems. Michinski read a list of possible things the city could work on.
Provide anti-drug education in middle school and high schools. Disseminate information to community members on how to obtain help.
Michinski called on the city to act.
Sometimes it's too late. It's not too late for a lot of people out there, and we could really help these people, and I hope this community could come together. Sad. We need to do something.
Council members discussed the need for a treatment center specifically for heroin addiction in Bethel and agreed the city needs to work with law enforcement to crack down on drug dealers. Since the meeting, Bethel city manager says she's been working on putting together a multi-agency community task force to address Bethel's heroin problems. In Bethel, I'm Daisha Eaton.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a retired vice cop wants sexual assault education for kids.
We're doing them a disservice service by not having these frank discussions at an early age and opening a dialogue.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Northern Air Cargo, providing year-round transportation of all types of freight, from vehicles and oversized equipment to small packages for corporations or small business. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956. And by Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, stocking rope, chain, and boat anchors from 5 to 3,000 pounds, on the web at arcticwirerope.com.
The Fairbanks North Star Borough is holding a public meeting tonight on proposed rules for marijuana businesses. Borough Mayor Luke Hopkins' administration will be laying out a zoning ordinance governing what types of marijuana operations will be permitted and where.
Trying to lay down our idea of where the commercialization aspects, the growing, the manufacturing, testing, and sales can be in our community before people select the wrong piece of property where we say that's not going to be allowed.
Hopkins says the borough will display maps showing local zoning as well as overlaying federal drug-free zones, like those requiring a 1,000-foot buffer around schools.
Where will businesses be allowed to set up and to operate in relationship not only to our zones, but to these sensitive use areas where the federal government and the community may say we don't want it around certain areas? It's already been a strong statement that don't want any of this in residential areas.
The legalization initiative approved by Alaska voters last fall does not allow use of marijuana in public. But Mayor Hopkins says there's no clear definition of what that means relative to businesses.
Our proposal is not to allow any of the smoking clubs or marijuana consumption bars at this time. Also, the state has been trying to bring the law forward in terms of their definition. It may not match ours. So that aspect of marijuana usage is still up in the air.
Mayor Hopkins says questions and public comments will be taken at tonight's meeting. Busting drug dealers, sex traffickers, and prostitutes is a tough job. Recently retired Sergeant Kathy Lacey did that dangerous work for 20 years as the head of Anchorage Police Department's undercover vice unit. Lacey says when she first started in law enforcement, prostitution and drug crimes were more visible out on the street. Now, though, she says trafficking is more covert.
Now it's gone more behind closed doors. It's more sophisticated. The traffickers are, you know, have a lot more money at stake. It's more difficult. It requires a lot more delving into it to figure out who actually is a trafficker.
Are there recruiters going out to rural Alaska to try to lure young women and possibly young men into Anchorage or Fairbanks? Is this happening?
Yes. We had a case specifically where the trafficker was going out to villages to recruit. What level or how many, it's really difficult to see because, again, you know, that's what's so difficult about sex trafficking. So much of it is hidden from view. It's very difficult to figure out who's doing what. But absolutely, we had a case where that's exactly what he was doing.
What about traffickers from outside of the state? The FBI says there's cartels running drugs from Mexico and pipelines right to Alaska. Is there something comparable happening with the trafficking type of network?
Yes, absolutely. It's really easy. And we've seen that a lot. We've made arrests here where the women were up here, sometimes with a trafficker and sometimes they weren't with the trafficker. He had sent them up here to make money. They wire money. Well, they don't even wire money back anymore. They put it on a card and he can pull it out from whatever state he's in. So we have arrested traffickers that were out of Las Vegas and were running women here. So absolutely.
What about women being trafficked in Alaska? Are they sometimes taken out of state?
We're not seeing that they're really taken out of state, although we see, especially in the massage parlor circuit, they're moved from, like they'll work in California for a while, then they'll be moved to Alaska, then they'll go to New York, and then they'll, so there's kind of a circuit there.
How has the massage parlor type of trafficking, how has that changed? It seems like there's more massage parlors in Anchorage.
Mm-hmm.
What have you seen as far as the growth or the changes in that industry?
It's easy to make money as a trafficker when you own a massage parlor because you've got what appears to be a legitimate business front. And the only way you know that it's not legitimate is if somebody goes in there and gets sex instead of getting a massage. So those, again, are a great moneymaker for the trafficker. And they often have different layers of who gets the business license, who has a massage practitioner's license. So it takes a lot of investigation to find out who actually is behind it and who's actually taking the money.
There's a new mayor-elect. Mayor-elect Ethan Berkowitz is going to be mayor of Anchorage now. Where would you want him to focus immediately if you were going to talk to him and advise him about what needs to happen?
He has talked about reinstituting the gang unit, getting the special assignment unit back online to what they were doing before. I think those are some of the most important steps. You have to have the staffing. I mean, that's key. We have a ton of retirements. We have a ton of people leaving. You've got to have the staffing to make these things happen. But that being said, you have to understand that those units are really important to keeping your overall crime rate down. And if you don't have those units attacking that problem and working on that problem and being proactive, you're going to see that spike in crime. And I think he understands that. So I think hiring more officers is key. I'd like to also see more focus on retention of the officers that they have. And that's something the department is not doing because you've got a lot of experience walking out the door.
There's been a lot of back and forth over the passage of Aaron's Law in
yes.
the state. Now the law has been changed, or the legislation that has been put forward has been changed, making it optional in schools rather than mandatory. What are your thoughts about these types of laws and this type of legislation? What do you think is appropriate and what should be happening in schools?
I think we are missing the boat with not getting to kids sooner. Every kid has a world at their fingertips with a smartphone. And we don't talk to our kids about that. And I think we need to be talking to our kids in junior high school, especially about healthy relationships, about domestic violence, about how you present yourself, about sexual assault. I think these kind of issues need to be mandatory for every kid. We're doing them a disservice by not discussing these options and having these frank discussions at an early age and opening a dialogue. I mean, look at our sexual assault rates in this state. Why are we afraid to talk about that in a preventative way much earlier than we are? We need to be talking to girls about traffickers that are, you know, are just interested in their physical appearance and their body. And we're not having those discussions.
Retired APD Sergeant Kathy Lacey is now a consulting producer on a developing television series that will feature vice crime in Anchorage.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Alaska Pipeline Service Company, committed to safety, operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska Pipeline since 1977. If you're ready to quit tobacco, Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line can help with free confidential coaching and support services through the telephone and online. Now introducing Text to Quit, a way to help you use medications correctly, manage urges, and prevent relapse all from your mobile phone. Call 1-800-QUIT now or visit AlaskaQuitLine.com for more information. This message is sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Prevention and Control Program.
The King of Norway visited Anchorage today, bearing a message of goodwill and the message that climate change is a priority for all Arctic nations. After visiting the Anchorage Museum, the Norwegian monarch, King Harald V, spoke at a luncheon hosted by the Alaska World Affairs Council, where he urged the value of science and study in the far north.
Research and reliable data is essential in our struggle against climate change. The projects at the poles give us valuable knowledge in finding solutions to one of the greatest challenges of our time.
And to hit that point home, Harald reiterated the words of a famous Norwegian explorer.
Roald Amundsen once said that, I quote, "Victory awaits him who has everything in order." Luck, people call it. Defeat is certain for him who has neglected to take the necessary precautions in time. This is called bad luck. Take Amundsen's advice seriously. Let no stone be left unturned as you seek to increase our understanding about the Arctic. Work hard, be well prepared, and you will have, as Amundsen put it, good luck.
King Harold's two-day visit to Alaska culminated today in Anchorage. Yupik singer and drummer Byron Nikolai performed in Washington, D.C. this past week in front of Secretary of State John Kerry. KYUK intern Ellie Coggins has the story.
That's Byron Nikolai of Tuksuk Bay singing and drumming for John Kerry, Admiral Robert Papp, and ambassadors of the Arctic Circle in Washington, D.C. Nikolai, 17, sings in the traditional Yupik style with some original variation. Over the last few years, he's been gaining popularity, performing all over the state. However, he says he was surprised to be asked to perform in the nation's capital, and at first didn't realize the significance.
I thought it wasn't something big, but when I got there, I realized how important it was, and I realized who I was performing for, and yeah, I was surprised that they wanted me to perform there.
He performed three songs in the Harry S. Truman Building at the State Department: My Alaska Song, I Sing, You Dance, and a song written by Joe Bill, which translates into This Place Here Is Happy.
I picked the third song because it's like more upbeat, and just by watching, you could dance with your feet, dance with your head. One of them was like kind of following the beat of the drum with his feet, so it was pretty upbeat and it was pretty fun.
While in D.C., Nikolai had an interesting cultural experience at the Smithsonian.
I went to the American Indian Museum, the Smithsonian, and saw a picture of my grandmother there and a seal intestine cuspook she made and a video of her kind of dancing. It was a pretty fun trip.
Nikolai plans on more travel and performances over the summer. In Bethel, I'm Ellie Coggins.
When a salmon is caught in Bristol Bay, it's difficult to know where it came from. That's long been a challenge to fishery managers in Bristol Bay and worldwide. New research on the Nooshogak River, one of the largest king salmon runs in the world, uses chemical tags in a fish's ear bone to tell where it was born and raised. KDLG's Hannah Colton reports.
In the summer of 2011, Sean Brennan spent a lot of time on the docks of Peter Pan Seafoods in Dillingham. He was dissecting the heads of salmon that were on their way to be processed. He collected ear bones from about 250 Chinook salmon.
Which involves cutting off the top of their head. And so you just take your tweezers, you reach below the brain, and you pull out the sac and the entire otolith.
He's saying otolith. That's the term used by scientists for the ear bone. Brennan and his team also headed up to the upper Nooshogak River to collect ear bones from juvenile fish in the streams there.
We would take out their tiny little otoliths as well.
He was interested in the ear bone because it contains an important clue about where the fish lived in streams and rivers before migrating to the ocean. That clue is called strontium. It's a chemical element found in bedrock.
But not all strontium is created equal, so some of the strontium in Earth is heavier, and some of the strontium is lighter.
Those different types of strontium are called isotopes. They're like different shades of strontium that show up in different types of rocks. Water flows over those rocks all the time. The river picks up the strontium, which makes its way into the bodies of fish.
The different stretches of rivers that the fish are in are essentially tagging the otolith at that particular time in that fish's life.
So you end up with these slightly different strontium layers on the ear bone, and researchers can read them almost like rings on a tree stump. Brennan has been using his ear bone data to put together a map of different types of strontium in different areas of the Nooshogak watershed. What he wanted to know was,
can you use this tracer to actually figure out where fish came from and which habitats they used while they were in the freshwater environment?
And as it turns out, he could. Brennan says one exciting result of his research is that he can now identify seven distinct zones, seven different shades of strontium, in the Nooshogak watershed. So
when we catch Chinook salmon in Nooshogak Bay, we now have the ability to determine which of those seven groups produced that particular fish.
Scientists like Brennan say this is a big deal. Other tracing methods, like genetics, paint much broader strokes. There's just not much genetic variation between kings in Bristol Bay. But the strontium in a Chinook's ear bone can tell the precise tributary where that fish hatched and how long it stayed there. Brennan found that most Nooshigak Chinook stay in their natal streams until they head for open ocean. But some make a move.
About 20% of the kitch showed that they stayed in the same stream that they hatched out of for the majority of the time while they were in the freshwater. But then right before they migrated to the ocean, they moved into the lower mainstem Nooshigak River, and they reared there for an extended period of time before they migrated into the ocean.
So it's like this little clique of teenage salmon have a hangout spot that scientists didn't know much about before.
And I guess what's interesting about that is that I guess the common thought is that the lower Nooshigak River doesn't necessarily produce that many fish.
These new results, he says, cast the lower Nooshigak in a different light. They show it's actually home to about a fifth of young Chinook for a significant time in their lives. So what else could Brennan's strontium isotope tracking method be used for? USGS ecologist Chris Zimmerman, who advised on the study, says it could help fisheries all over the state better understand year-to-year changes.
One of the things we hear throughout Western Alaska is it's, you know, when we see declines, it's a bit of a surprise. And our hope is to better understand how freshwater habitats relate to productivity.
Brennan and Zimmerman hope this isotope tracking research will take some of that surprise out of the equation, helping predict the changes that may affect salmon runs.
You know, it wouldn't all of a sudden, you wouldn't find a year where commercial fishing or subsistence fishing had to be regulated like it has been on the Kuskokwim. You know, communities would have an idea that something like that was happening.
That's a few years off. For now, Brennan and his team have a few more ear bones to pick. The University of Washington team plans to study Chinook for a couple more years and add sockeye to the mix. Reporting in Dillingham, I'm Hannah Colton.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can also follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Ann Hillman in Anchorage, Daisha Eaton and Ellie Coggins in Bethel, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, and Hannah Colton in Dillingham. APRN's Alexander Gutierrez reported from Juneau. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Monica Goki is our web producer. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating jobs and business opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. The law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com. And by Wells Fargo, extending its support of Alaska residents beyond banking by supporting the programming of public radio throughout Alaska, giving back to the community. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far. Alaska Pacific University offers an affordable education, small class sizes, and life-friendly schedules designed to support your personal and professional goals. APU is still accepting applications for fall 2015. Find out about financial aid and the promised tuition grant and apply online at alaskapacific.edu before Saturday, August 1st. This message sponsored by Alaska Pacific University.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.